Welcome back to the Soapbox podcast. And we can say that we have committed and we have managed to make it work to record a podcast on time. How has your week been, Dad? And then we'll get to mine.
Yes, my week's been pretty frantic. Number one, helping son move. We'll talk about it shortly, I'm sure. And said last time that you were moving and been up and down to help with that. And also been putting an app together for parents on Faith Builders app on how to grow their children in faith and grow resilient faith. So that's been something I've been putting together and busy with design and planning and printing and getting the app built and all of that. So it's been, I guess, exciting to be doing it, but also challenging at the same time as you see the roadblocks come and have to work over them or around them or through them to get it to completion. So that's been my week, flat out with moving logistics and app building.
Yeah, and speaking of moving, that's been my week. I don't think I've slept in a normal bed for a little while, but it's been a frantic but good time. The logistics for this one have been a little more complicated than usual because I'm down to one car and will be for the foreseeable future, unfortunately, until parts arrive from Japan. But yeah, as stuff arrives tomorrow, well, as in today, if you're listening to the podcast, and it's all coming together. So fingers crossed by this time tomorrow afternoon, the house is starting to look like a house, and we will be able to get on with my new role.
Those playing at home or overseas, so Andrew and his lovely wife have moved from up the far north coast of New South Wales, so up closer to Brisbane, to now they're down on the we call it the
Central
mid north
Coast.
coast, central coast, the central coast, closer to Sydney. And Andrew's starting there in a brand new church, Forrester's Beach Church, so you can Google that and find where that is. And it's all happening for Andrew and Michaela right now.
It is all happening, and I've just had not my cat, but the other cat come join me during the podcast recording. So there's that. If you're a cat lover, you might hear some purrs or some meows in the background. That's why. But today we want to talk about faith, really. Really, we just want to talk about faith. But specifically, we want to look at two things. How do we make the faith of kids resilient? And also, what's going on with our institution slash the wider church in terms of its faith development? And I'll reference some articles that I will put in the show notes at the end of the show. So you can go and read those things as well if you want to come up with your own views around this. But stages of faith, that sounds like a bit mystical or weird or something different. For some people that may not understand what we're talking about, the stages of faith was a concept developed by a guy called James Fowler, and it's been changed and added on to. And it's kind of based on the stages of development that you might know from psychology.
Yeah,
But.
so if you go to Piaget or someone like that, you'll find their stages of, I guess, psychological growth. And yeah, Fowler took that and adapted it to the faith context. And I guess there's now been some growth on that in the last few years from some Adventist scholars, in particular John Pauline, who's a preeminent Adventist scholar. And he's done a lot of work around this as well.
Yeah, and so the difference between the stages of psychological development and the stages of faith development is that for faith development, it's not necessarily age-based. We know that our spiritual being is slightly different to our emotional and our cognitive being, and that spirituality develops in all kinds of growth spurts and backwards and forwards and all over the place throughout one's life. And I think that as we get into the topic today, it's going to be important to be aware of the fact that staying in the early stages isn't healthy. that we need to move on and develop and to grow our faith into something really solid. And so that is kind of the foundational understanding that we're going to be working from. So if you have a chance, go and look up Fowler's work and have a read of it, have an understanding, and think about where you might sit in those stages of faith development and where your faith is at. But raising resilient kids. We've read the research on this podcast before that when kids turn around about the age of 18, they go to uni and they leave the church. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking, as I've been reading the article and mulling over it for the podcast today, and I've been into the city, sent to the city and back on the train to a inter-church commission on religious education in schools. So I've been reading the article and mulling on the train going into the city and back out to Aroonga, which is sort of an Adventist mecca, put it that way, for Australia. And I wonder, are our kids, this question I guess we discussed right through this podcast, but are our kids graduating from their faith because they outgrow what the church has to offer? Now, that could be a little bit of a controversial topic, but is the church offering enough to grow our kids in the faith so that they remain resilient over time? Is really the question that I think is up for discussion. And are our kids graduating from their faith, but not so much graduating from God? That's another question. I think there's a lot of research around that, that sometimes kids will still believe in God, just that they might outgrow the institution that they go to for various reasons. So there's some food for thought and discussion to chew over there.
Yeah, so I might start with the church, and then I want to get and talk about the kids, because I think it's important that we situate this correctly. Now, John Pauline, who is perhaps the greatest Revelation scholar our church has ever seen, a New Testament scholar, he has written a lot, but he wrote an article a little while ago, which he's simply called Stages of Faith. And in it, he talks about what he has presented, but then he asks the question, is what is the stage of faith that our wider church body is in? Now, our church body as a whole is not a person, but he's asking what is the way in which our church operates and how does it treat people with questions, people that are pushing beyond the boundaries and are going past the binary of the either or, which is stage 2 and 3, and are pushing through to the shades of gray and the bits that we aren't quite so sure about, which we find in stages 4 and 5 as faith becomes really, really solid. And so in this article, John Pauline postulates that perhaps the church is more of a 3 or a 2. It's stuck in the binary and isn't able to deal with the questions that kids have, the questions that adults have as well, and is really perhaps more dogmatic than following in the steps that Jesus has actually set out for us.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a good statement. And I think we need to probably go through and try and briefly describe what different stages are for those that are listening. But, yeah, when there's nothing better than the new birth experience. I know that Andrew's not far away from experiencing a birth experience with a grandchild on the way, but a Christian birth experience described in the Bible as Jesus said to Nicodemus, you need to be born again. And there's nothing better than seeing a new Christian, newly baptized, really on fire. It's like they're just so excited in the honeymoon period, loving everything and soaking everything up. And yeah, it's like an infantile new faith, if you like. And that's what they call stage one. Do you want to talk about stage two, Andrew?
Well, there's actually a stage zero as well, which you've missed out on. But anyway, that's a whole different.
You want to fill that one in too? Please.
That's basically for people who are agnostic or are very, very young, like they're a baby. And so they're not even sure what's out there. And stage one is exactly what you said. And then we go to what is a very literal faith. It's called like the mythic literal faith.
Yep.
Where things are very concrete. If you think about a child who's around about the age of 3 or 4, or they're still not quite sure if mum or dad are definitely going to stay there. So if mum or dad goes around the corner, it's very concrete. They need to make sure that they can see mum or dad actually being there. It's kind of like that, but for your whole faith, everything is very concrete. If you're told something, it's absolutely true or it's absolutely not true. There's no in between.
And you worship the heroes in your faith community and in your denomination that you almost want to build statues to them, because in every word that they say, you hang off.
You hang off in there. It's true. It doesn't end. And there's actually a book called The Celebrity Pastor, and I'll have to link that down below.
Yes.
Which comes from an evangelical tradition, but they're seeing the same thing, is where people whose faith is built on a very concrete thing, which is someone that's a great person, when they inevitably have a moral failing or they fall and they fail, it actually can destroy people's faith as well. But that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah, but also when churches are planted, often in the church planter moves on, the church collapses. And because they've been planted on the celebrity rather than on being a church.
Exactly. And so if a church's DNA is based on a single pastor and they move on, it has a crisis. It either fails or they have to maybe go beyond what stage they were in and work things out.
And it might explain also, Andrew, not wanting to throw stones, but we're by no means perfect in our denomination, by no means perfect, but the Southern Baptists have lost literally thousands and thousands of members in most recent times. And when you go and look at Southern Baptists, a parting of the ways has been over black and white thinking versus probably the next level of thinking. And some of the churches moved to the levels 3 and 4. And many of the churches are stuck in level 2. And that might explain a lot of the issues going on in the Southern Baptist and the loss of membership over there at the moment.
Yeah, and I think we see that sort of thing play out in our own denomination as well, which I think is kind of where we're headed as well. I've been throwing this idea around for quite a while. And when you come across groups of members that are stuck in a very early stage, it creates a culture that doesn't allow there to be any change, doesn't allow there to be any different thinking that isn't biblically wrong, but it is wrong according to the dogma that people are holding on to.
Yeah, and that's where rubber meets the road, I think, for some of our kids, where they have a lot of questions. And when kids are moving from one stage to another, often the doubts and questions are a sign of that. And some churches and some parents can take that as, oh, my child is leaving the faith. Whereas understanding, and it's a big clue, I guess, for keeping our kids, if it's about wrestle with the questions and not have the answers, we can help a child or a member move from one stage to another and just be a mentor and a friend to them. And that came through in the article very clearly too, that especially moving from stage 2 to 3, or 3 to 4, I think.
You're 3 to 4.
Yeah, 3 to 4, was having good mentors in place to help lead them on that journey. And Maggie Dent calls this lighthouses. I like the idea of having lighthouses, especially in our kids' lives, but even in a new convert's life as they move through the stages, or even our own lives, having others around who are lighthouse that we can talk to, bounce off, hear from, and wrestle with the questions.
Yeah, and as I reflect on that, there's been people who I've sat with who are going between stage 3 and 4, and they themselves are freaking out, thinking they're about to throw their whole faith out. And I'm like, oh, no, this is a great thing. And yes. Like, what do you mean? Because a lot of people, they hit what's called the wall and they go back to what was comfortable rather than going deeper with God and allowing their faith to grow and to flourish. So stage 3, that's really when the rubber starts to meet the road. And if you're a kid, you start to make your faith your own. So you're synthesizing.
Fowler called it individualization of the faith.
Yes.
And this is what Pauline is talking about, is that we all go for a stage where it's not a celebrity's faith, it's not the pastor's faith, it's not even your parents' faith. It's where you begin to make it your own. And that might be different to what your previous hero's faith was.
Mm. and it might change, and that's entirely okay. And I think that's kind of the thing that we're getting at, is that if we're going to create resilient kids, which we'll get to in a moment, we need our churches to be okay with this shift towards something that might look a little bit different, at least for a while. And I think that's kind of the struggle. And I've got some books here, which I'll reference in a little bit, that talk about the current generations and the struggles that they're going through that are different to their parents, but it's the same as well. So let's finish off the stages of faith. We've got stage four, which is often, if you've been in faith for your whole life, happens around your mid-20s, where you take complete personal responsibility for all your beliefs and feelings. They take lots of complexity and shades of nuance. And this is where things start to get a little bit gray and you start to get a little bit more open-minded. And I'm going to say that this is what is currently called deconstruction. So it's been labeled as deconstruction, but no, stage four I see is deconstruction. It's throwing the bits out that don't quite work for you and working out what does work for you properly. Then we've got stage five, which you might want to call a midlife crisis. But
yes, I was looking at that today and thinking, have I been there, or maybe I am there? It's almost like some call it depression, the depression years.
And I'd say I've found myself in that stage at times. I think I've been between a stage four and a stage five.
And that's a good point there, Andrew, in that you don't just go from one stage to the next and stay there. You can go backwards and forwards between the stages, and you can repeat them again and again and again. They're a bit cyclic. So, yeah.
Exactly. And the stuff that I've been through over the past couple of years, I think I've been going between the stage four and the stage five. And in the stage five, I'm having a crisis of faith. I'm hitting the wall and going, does this all match up? How do I reconcile all of this? Where are we going with all of this? And then I know, as I continue to journey, that eventually I might reach stage six. Which is a universalization, or a person who is not freaked out by the differences. They're not hemmed in by specifics. They're willing to consider their faith with God is really strong, that something different isn't threatening.
And I think I would call that a non-anxious faith as well, where you can believe that, that's fine, but this is what I believe and this is what I think we can do. And I'm quite happy to have an open and frank discussion and not feel challenged by it or put down by it. And I think that what Fowler says, and I guess what even Pauline says in the article, is that not many actually reach that stage. No. Very few do. And often when they do, they're often seen as rebels or seen as different, and often pushed out of the straitjacket that often denominations want to stay in, or churches want to stay in. So it becomes very challenging for them at the same time. But again, because they're not worried and they're solid, it doesn't really worry them anyway. So that's a bit frustrating, I think, for those that are in stages two or three, saying, hang on, why aren't you more worried about these things? And why don't you believe like I do? So, yes. Stage five is a very interesting, solid phase. And I think it's also a nice phase for someone to be in. As they, I imagine, if you look at the age there, they're probably in late 50s, 60s, approaching retirement or retired, and quite happy to have that more mulled internal faith at that stage.
Yeah. And as we think about that and we apply it to our organization, and this is not a critique of the Adventist church. This is a reflection on local churches in general, no matter what faith tradition you come from, I think. A lot of churches get stuck in the early phases because that is the phase of a lot of the people that attend. And I think we've got to have people in our churches in all different stages. But at the very least, the leadership of our churches should be leaders who are on that faith journey and have progressed and have grown and are able to maintain a non-anxious presence and aren't threatened by the difference. Because I think when we get leaders like that, we're going to see a lot more kids stay in the church. I'm not saying that leaders are the reason the kids are leaving, but what I'm saying is that when we're able to have leaders that are able to lead like that, we'll be able to see our kids progress from stage to stage and grow in their faith and stay as followers of Jesus beyond the age of 16, 17, and 18.
Yeah, and I'll agree completely with that. And I think my advice to leadership would be to not so much come out with pronounced, but this is what we believe, and on various hot topics that are around right now. And often we as a denomination want to be quick to jump to a statement of belief rather than saying, let's talk about this. And what I liked about our previous GC president was that he would have open online sessions with youth and say, let's talk. And it was basically I as a GC president want to listen to the youth and hear your questions and just have an open discussion around that. And I really appreciated that as a pastor watching those sessions, because it meant that, hey, we may not have all the answers here, and that's okay. We're just going to have a discussion and listen to you as young people. And that was a really positive move the nomination back in at the previous GC president's days, and he made an effort to listen, at least to listen. I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, and I think that our organization can learn from that, and that's basically just the growing young research, by the way, listening to young people and their questions, allowing them to feel heard, and guess what, they tend to stick around. If I look towards the research, there's a book called Meet Generation Z by James Emery White. And in that, he kind of references a little bit of the growing young research, but references a lot of his own research and some of McCrindle's stuff, looking at what Generation Z is experiencing in the social marketplace online, and looking at how that often doesn't line up very well with the messages that they hear from the pulpit in churches. And he notes that Generation Z is more compassionate, believes in equality, and believes in treating people fairly far more than any other generation before them. And he notes that the fact that they are walking out of church and they're walking out of many faith traditions isn't that they are leaving Jesus. It's rather that the faith traditions haven't kept up with the growth and the spiritual growth of those young people. And so the church no longer meets the needs of those people.
I think you might be onto something there, or White's onto something. I need to put that into the references as well, because that's a really good book and worth having a read to ponder on. And I think from what that's saying is that often we want to give the answers rather than listen to the questions and the doubts and the fears and just be alongside rather than dictating from the top. And when we make pronouncements as a leader in the social media space on what we think is the right answer to certain hot potatoes, it alienates, because it's saying that we have the answer and this is the answer and you need to believe it, rather than saying, hey, let's come reason together and discuss together and wrestle together with this topic. And I think we need to be careful as leaders not to make pronouncements, even though it might be correct, but to be prepared to go where it's grey and have that discussion and not give the answers, and trust that the young people will come to the right understanding at the end of that discussion, which generally happens anyway.
Yeah. I think that if we are going to raise resilient kids that are growing in their faith, we have to take it another step further and recognize the fact that young kids, and it's kind of referencing James stuff, young kids can be further along in their spiritual development than some of our older members in our churches.
You're spot on. And sometimes, again, even in our Bible study methods that we've produced, would rather give the answers than leave the questions. Mm. And that has grown up generations of Adventist Christians who have not had to wrestle with the faith because they've been told what to believe. Whereas, as you say, the Generation Z and that then those coming behind them, that giving them the answers is not what they want. As you said, there's compassion there and there's thinking and understanding and being prepared to embrace the grey areas and wrestle with the grey areas. And I think we as a church are sometimes, I guess, scared to let go, scared to let go and trust.
Scared to let go and trust. And I think that is typical of this of an institution that's stuck in stage two. John Pauline, in his article, he basically says that most institutions, he believes, can't grow beyond stage three. That, and he's not saying that members can't. He's saying as an institution, we can't really seem to go beyond stage three. Because if we go beyond stage three, we have to have a reckoning with ourselves and have a look at the dark night of the soul and see what we're really about as a whole corporate group in order to go beyond a stage three. But the people who do go beyond stage three in our churches, they start to feel more and more out of sync with the institution that they're a part of. And for me, that goes straight back to James Emery White's book where he's talking about that and the growing young research is that we actually have to grow with each other and enable each other to experience that success and experience that spiritual growth as a whole corporate church, rather than expecting the church to do all the legwork to get our faith to grow. So in other words, when I read John Pauline's stuff, when I read all of the current researchers out there, as a corporate church, we have to be a church of individuals and individually all be growing each other's faith. That's the only way that we can get out of the rut that we seem to be stuck in, which is a very dogmatic, institutionalized form of church. In other words, we have to become a movement again.
Yes, I think that's a good word to use, is that when there's a movement, there's more freedom to grow and to move forward and maybe to advance to another stage or two. I think also when I look at, and I'm not here to have a crack at the nomination. I love modern nomination. I'm for modern nomination and love what they do. We've got some amazing work that we as a denomination does. But what I see is, and this again happens in institutions too, is there's a parting of the ways from what you call the scholars and the intellectuals who are in our universities and our colleges and our teachers. And we almost, because they want to push thinking and want to push understanding and I guess try and relook at what the Bible actually says at times, that is a challenge to a stage two or stage three faith. And so we tend to write the institutions that are our teaching institutions and training institutions off because it's just too scary to think of anything else otherwise, or that there might be some shades of grey, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm walking around some eggshells. There's a lot of stuff I would like to say, but I'm not going to say because I don't think it's going to be actually helpful to the point that we've made.
Yep.
But I think that what you've referenced comes back to a difference between a very dogmatic literalist view of everything versus the willing to understand that the Bible is written by humans, but it is still God-inspired, and that things aren't as crystal clear as we would necessarily want them to be, and that's okay. And I think that's a difference, because if I said that second idea in some rooms, it would be a really controversial statement to make, when in actuality it is the exact understanding of inspiration that our church has understood for a very, very, very long time. But
Which brings me back to the idea of story. And you got to realize the Bible is written in a series of stories. And stories is something that is huge at the moment with society at large out there, but also with our young people, the Generation Z, etc., is that stories are powerful for them and creating story. But also sometimes we want to moralize the story rather than let the story speak for itself. And for some reason, God chose to communicate through stories and through narrative and through characters. And there's not a lot of thus says the Lord. It's here's a story, and this is how this person grew in the Lord.
Mm. Absolutely. And I think that's kind of a good summary, is that all that Jesus, that God, throughout the whole Bible, all he wants for his people is for them to grow in relationship with him. And I believe that we are called at the moment, and there's a big push to reinvigorate that whole thing, to reinvigorate the importance of a relationship with Jesus, because that is the thing that actually is going to lead people towards us, towards accepting Jesus and experiencing salvation, is having an active relationship with Jesus. And if you're in a relationship or if you're in a marriage, you can't help but grow.
And that's the thing, our last podcast on AI and how, and go back and look at that, if you haven't watched that one or listened to that one yet, because it talks about some people are opting out of relationships because it's too hard and are creating an AI in their own image. And when you apply that to today, sometimes we want to create our religion into our own image, which is almost a form of idolatry, rather than being in a relationship with Jesus. And one of Growing Young's calls, six calls, is, and we'll reference this as well, is to take the message of Jesus seriously. Another one is to fuel warm community. And Generation Z values relationship. They value community. And they actually value that they don't want a meek and mild message. They want this is who Jesus was. He was a radical. This is the call he made on people's lives. They actually want to hear that message. And so often we're
Jesus
busy preaching.
He's in John.
Yeah. So often we're busy wanting to preach the truth rather than preach the message of Jesus and help people see a true picture of who Jesus really is.
So, to apply this back towards the ideas we have today, if we're going to make kids that have resilient faith, the core thing that we need to do is to introduce them to Jesus and have a relationship, and so they can have a relationship with Jesus. But more than that, we need leaders that have an active relationship with Jesus, and we need members that have an active relationship with Jesus. And when we get those three things flourishing, people are going to want to grow in their faith. They're not going to be stuck in the dogma and the doctrine. They're not going to be stuck in the stage two, very binary thinking. People will be willing to take that next step beyond. And perhaps that will fuel a movement that is willing to be a safe space for anyone that walks through our doors.
That's a good way to almost finish on, Andrew. I think that's a really good summary, I think, of what we're looking for. And I think I want to sort of really drive home the power of placing mentors in your life, especially those that are in those upper stages, that can mentor your kids and grow them beyond the parents' faith if need be as well, and be okay with that. And as parents and as leaders, I think the other thing is to make sure you maintain a non-anxious presence, especially when kids are going through those doubting stages or as the dark stages that Pauline talks about. But being prepared to be a lighthouse and be there as a lighthouse on their journey, not just for kids but for all those progressing on the journey of faith. And don't freak out when the hard, doubting questions are asked, but rejoice that this person's moving from one stage to another and is growing in their faith, and that's what discipleship's all about.
Celebrate it.
Very much so.
And I think that's something we need to do far more of as well. And that's a whole other subject in and of itself. But I think with that, I'm going to get us out of this conversation because I think we've covered the ground that we wanted to cover today. And if you want to go read about the stages of faith development, I will have linked the John Pauline article in the comments. I will have James Fowler's work there. I'll have a link to Meet Generation Z, or Z because he's American, but it's Z because we're Australian, by James Emery White.
Growing Young.
And Growing Young, and I'll put some other research there as well for you that I've got my hands on. But with that, I think it's time for us to finish. And I want to say thank you for listening to the Soapbox Podcast. We hope you appreciate us being on time this time. And we hope that that is going to become a more regular occurrence.
Yes, see you in a fortnight.
See you
Over and
then.
out.
Over and out.